should know that sound. That's the Sunday morning sound of Baffler Spears Broadsides. Civil rights for the poor, civil rights for everybody else, plus lots of other bits and pieces thrown in. 2.5 hours of call-in, call-out, and lots of interesting stuff. Phone number here for you to call is 427-3772. We're going to begin with a long interview with Attorney Cade Wells on recent legal issues here in Santa Cruz. And we're going to be talking about the aftermath of the bombing, the police brutality that accompanied the May 22nd protest and the response to it coming up on Monday, plus reports from different parts of the state and the country around basic rights for homeless people. I'm your host, Baffler Spear, Robert Norris. Stay tuned, tune in, and call.
Rockefeller, Campanella, Communist Bloc, Roy Cohn, Warfaron, Puccinini, Dacron, Dengen, Foo-Balls, Rock Around the Clock, Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn, Dallow, Wayne, and Dean, Davy, Blanket, Peter Pan, Elvis, Percy, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Katie Brick, Trouble in the Silhouette, we didn't talk to fire.
On the line with us, we have attorney and civil rights activist Kate Wells. Hi, Kate.
Hey.
And Kate, you've, of course, been fighting on a number of fronts. I know that you were a sleeping band partisan, defending a lot of people in the City Hall Sleepers protest in 1997, raising your voice on the issue at City Hall in 1999 when the City Council did its famous sleeping band sellout.
Yeah.
And you're continuing to defend the cases of people who are charged with sleeping tickets, which are continuing to come in, like Dennis Rehm, who actually I read about in the last issue of Street Spirit, the case of a man who was ticketed for sleeping in his vehicle, felt the police officer lied about the issue, but was found guilty anyway, and then used a rather unusual defense. You want to tell us about that?
The officer didn't see him. He was in the back of his camper, and the officer stated basically that he heard him snoring. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, that was what happened. I don't mean so much the defense at the trial, because he was found guilty, but rather his defense for the entire ticket was, I guess, what has come to be called, or what I've called the
Flory defense.
The Flory Edwards Jacobs defense, or the Fedge defense.
Right. Well, basically, he was found guilty, and they have imposed a fine, and he is refusing to pay the fine. Mm-hmm. And the Flory defense is that basically, since this was an infraction in the first place, that they cannot jail him for failing to pay.
You mean an infraction is a sort of a minor category of crime as compared with a more serious misdemeanor or felony?
Yes, in fact, the entire idea behind an infraction, the reason that you're not entitled to a jury trial as you would be with a misdemeanor or a felony, is that they cannot impose jail time.
Mm-hmm.
And the code section is quite clear that unless they state at the time of the imposition of sentence to, in other words, to this fine, unless they state that and inform you that you are you can go to jail unless you pay the fine, that they cannot, in fact, jail you.
Hmm.
So even though they keep trying to do that, so at this point, Dennis Rehm's case is going to be a trial case that we're going to challenge this practice.
So what happened was, as I understand it, Dennis refused to pay his fine, and so he got a warrant for his arrest for a so-called failure to pay, which
right.
isn't really a law, right? It isn't really a code section.
No, nope, there is no code section, and there is as to misdemeanors and felonies, mm-hmm. but not as to infractions.
Well, I also understand that it's a misdemeanor to fail to pay a vehicular infraction. At least that's what I was told by that old activist Robert Fleury about it. Half a decade ago when he originated this defense. But luckily the sleeping ban is not a vehicular offense. It's a non-vehicular defense, and therefore, I mean, a non-vehicular offense.
Exactly. Yeah. But you understand that the failure to pay, mm-hmm. as far as a vehicular offense, it being a new charge and it being a misdemeanor...
You're entitled to a jury trial.
You would be entitled to a jury trial, and the state would have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that you willfully failed to pay or willfully failed to appear,
mm-hmm.
Which is the onus, of course, is on them. So that be sure, and if that does happen, you definitely demand a jury trial.
Right, and of course, it supposedly couldn't happen with a sleeping ban because unless there's some new code passed that I'm unaware of, maybe you're aware of it, there is no code section for failure to pay an infraction crime.
That's correct. As far as I know, there is no such...
non-vehicular infraction, sorry.
Right.
Now I guess the question is, that in different courts, this has gone different ways. I know Judge Morse has simply, when Robert Fleury brought up this defense, declared him in contempt of court and had him put in jail, ordered him to pay the fine. Is that a likely outcome of judges when faced with this legal anomaly that they have no law to use, or they simply use their discretion? What do you think?
It'll be interesting to find out. I this is something that hasn't happened in quite some time. I think Flory was doing this, say, 5 years ago.
Uh-huh.
There hasn't been much activity since then, so it's really hard to predict what they're going to do. Of course, that Mulligan's Court down there in the bowels of the
county building.
County building basically is the money maker for the county, and anything that might jeopardize this, they're greasing the wheels of the county would of course be a major threat to them.
So actually, you did take the case to Mulligan's Court, although Mulligan was not the sitting. Not judge, because he's not a judge, sitting referee at that time. Instead, you had, I guess, some other person.
Patterson
on the bench, who sort of is an attorney who acts and takes care of these cases. And when he was presented with a warrant, well, you and Dennis both talked about this on an earlier show, but as I understand it, what happened was he said that he felt the warrant was issued in error.
That's correct. He said the warrant was issued in error, and that...
This is a warrant for his failure to pay a sleeping ban ticket, which I guess would have been $162, and then after April 23rd, it dropped to $54 under the new city council law.
Right. As far as I'm concerned, the only recourse that the city would have at this point would be to sue Dennis Rehm in civil court,
mm-hmm.
For the fine. And of course, when you multiply that times however many cases there are like this, it just wouldn't be worthwhile for the city to have to bring a civil lawsuit against all of these people.
Mm-hmm.
My cynical guess is that they will encourage the legislature to pass a law or to the county board or whatever, an ordinance or a law of some sort that the states that they can in fact do that.
That they can in fact a misdemeanor, why make it a misdemeanor to not pay a camping ban ticket, let's say.
Right, right. But, I mean, there are lots of constitutional issues involved because, you know, the whole idea of having the infraction is that there's no possibility of any jail time.
So, but at the moment, as far as you understand it, there is, if you refuse to pay your sleeping ban tickets, and then legally speaking, the only recourse they have is a civil judgment?
That's my legal opinion.
Now, what happened in court, as I understand it, last time was you went into night court with Dennis. You brought this warrant for it, because a warrant had been issued for his arrest because he failed to pay the ticket under a non-existent law, because there was no law to issue the warrant under.
Right.
You brought this issue to Patterson's attention.
Right. And then he said that basically the warrant had been issued in error, and that he still had the opportunity to pay the fine if he paid it by 5 o'clock the following day, which of course Dennis refused to do because he, from the outset, was going to refuse.
Now Patterson then said he would issue another, or that he thought another issue would, a warrant would issue, though.
Right.
He wouldn't issue it, right?
Exactly. Now I haven't seen the latest warrant. I did see the original warrant.
It is identical. I've seen it with the original warrant. And has exactly the same non-existent code section as the basis. The code section in which the warrant is issued is the sleeping ban section of the camping ordinance.
Right, which states infraction.
It is an infraction, correct.
Right. So the very act of arresting him, if they should happen to catch up with him before we make our court date, would be an unconstitutional act because they would be jailing him on the basis of an infraction.
This could be big bucks for you, Kate, I know.
Well, that's probably not true, but
trouble for them, we hope. So are you going to go into court and make essentially the same argument before the same judge or before the same black robe, we should say?
Well, sure, I'm definitely going to be making the same argument.
And do you think that you'll get the same result? I mean, it would be strange if you didn't, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'd be curious. Of course, if I had my druthers, I would not be in front of the referee, but unfortunately I came into the case, it was already too far along to be able to change.
And therein lies a lesson. If you get a sleeping ban ticket, you have to, at the arraignment or before, disqualify Mulligan and the bottom basement courtroom, which is the...
And by the way, I have that issue on appeal right now in another case.
Tell us about that case.
Going to take me to the magistrate case, where my client was, in fact, taken to jail because he demanded to be... This was on vehicular infractions. And we were, of course... given our court date in Mulligan's court, and I, on behalf of my client, refused to stipulate to the jurisdiction of the referee. He then stated, well, you have to use your one peremptory challenge, your 170.6, at which point I went ahead and used the 170.6, but under protest such that I could appeal the issue. So
the issue here, of course, is that usually you can just qualify one judge without any particular reason one way or the other, that is just based on your belief that he's prejudiced or you don't want him to hear the case.
You get one free ding.
One free ding. But you're suggesting that it's certainly true in the case of a misdemeanor, you can demand that the case be heard by a kind of full judge, not a commissioner, not a referee,
right.
Not a, moonlighting attorney, whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, Mulligan's not even an active member of the Bar Association.
Probably a number of bars he attends, but
yeah.
That's another story. But this has not ever been the case in infractions. It's not been clear that you can do this with infractions as well as more serious misdemeanors. And the significance for those of you out there who are homeless and getting these bogus infraction tickets for sitting on the sidewalk or, I don't know, shopping cart too long.
So many feet of an ATM.
Performing, panhandling, or sleeping. Handing out street spirit, right, like Steve argued.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if it's an infraction, this gives you the protection of taking a case to a judge who's more likely to at least listen to constitutional arguments before he says, like Judge Kelly said in 1997, well, you can sleep during the day. There's nothing wrong with making sure you can't sleep at night.
Case. Some sleep during the day.
Conviction affirmed, you know.
So in any case, you have this case on appeal, so you're looking to give people who want to disqualify judges for infractions and require a full judge, how far along is it?
At this point, I've done considerable research, and I still have not found anything that would lead me to believe that I didn't have the right to not have the case heard by the referee. The stage I am now is I have filed a notice of appeal. However, what they're saying is that I have to go through the whole case first before I can actually appeal that issue.
So that's at the early stages, you might say.
Right. We are in front of Commissioner Cloud at this point, and of course now having used our 170.6.
Which is a disqualified judge just at your one ding.
Having used our one ding, we can't disqualify the commissioner and get a real judge.
It seems to me that this is a good point to bring up the fact that I encourage everyone who gets an infraction sleeping ticket or what I call an anti-homeless ticket to make sure they disqualify, even if it's with a 170.6, which is your one ding,
right. Mulligan. Right.
And you do that by going to the basement of the county building and simply saying, I believe Mulligan to be prejudiced, I'm going to sign something to that effect, and I want another judge.
Right.
And the best judges to get, I guess, in these cases are Kelly or Salazar. Maybe
you're not going to get Kelly. Kelly just does felonies at this point. So
Salazar is the ones to get. You won't have a choice, but you can ask them which judge is coming up next on the rotating.
Basically,
system.
The three rotating judges at this point would be Cloud, Salazar, and Danner.
Right. So I've got no idea how Danner is ruling on sleeping van cases. Have you gotten any indication on that?
I got some inside information that that Mr. Danner is trying very hard at this point to overcome his negative impression with the defense attorney. So we'll see what happens.
Inside
information is that he's granting motions to suppress right and left, and that he's bending over backwards to show what a good guy he is.
So we get to bend over backwards in Addict's court, and he gets to bend over backwards in his court.
Yeah,
that bending over backwards can be a kind of a tricky thing.
Yeah.
You know, the Cherry Pie 3 are supposedly getting out of jail next week. Those are the three of the Biotic Bakers Brigade in San Francisco who presented three pies to Jerry Brown in a rather dramatic and direct fashion last November. Perhaps we should invite them into Danner's court to help loosen the court up a bit and really provide a little comic relief.
Sounds like a great idea. By the way, I wanted to comment on something that is in the, Mercury? No, it's in the Chronicle this morning, an article in the in the Metro section, actually, the Examiner, which talks about the cannabis clubs that are alive and well in San Francisco. So all of those people who keep calling me to find out where they can go, just look in the Metro section of the Examiner today, because I do constantly get calls about the...
There isn't really a cannabis club in town since, a year and a month ago.
No.
There is, I guess...
Holly Corral still has hers. It's according to people that I know who have...
With an endless waiting list.
There is an endless waiting list. Mm-hmm. I think Anita Henry still runs MedX, which is a delivery service. But basically, there are still at least four or five different places in San Francisco where they are actively distributing medical marijuana. So
and they're still going after Peter Baez, I understand, in San Jose for Joan Baez's sister and the head of the San Jose Cannabis Club.
I thought he was already had been convicted, but I haven't.
Oh, that could be. I don't know. Do you have any? Do you think he's been convicted?
I think so. I believe that happened, but I'm not sure.
But your impression was it was a bogus case?
Yeah, I think they did what they typically do, and that is build up the charges with all kinds of ridiculous charges and then force you to negotiate them down to a settlement of a few things just because you're facing a lot.
Right.
Now
you mentioned that you're working on expanding rights for poor defendants, folks confronted with infractions who should have an option to disqualify. a judge, you know, someone who's not a judge, as well as to make the one ding, plus, you know, to disqualify a judge later if they think the judge is prejudiced. There are other concerns that a lot of us have had, and that you're, of course, I'm sure, aware of. For example, referee Mulligan, the man who we encourage you to disqualify immediately, has been making findings, and you can see this on court calendars, that failure to appear is not a misdemeanor but an infraction. That is to say, something he can rule on immediately without a jury, without having a public defender appointed. And yet, the law librarian, Pat Fremmer, could find no such law in her book that would indicate that that a failure to appear is an infraction or can be made an infraction without the permission of the defendant. And even there, the question arises: there are only a limited number of cases that can be reduced from misdemeanors to infractions, even with the consent of the defendant. Have you got any sense about that, and what it would take to challenge that ruling, and what our chances would be?
Well, I think it would be an excellent rule to challenge, and I would welcome anyone to let me know if that happens to them. Just make it up as you go, old Mulligan thing. I've sat in court and watched it happen myself. Not that very thing, but other things that he's a master at what he does. He has a way of making you thank him for screwing you,
mm-hmm.
And being your best buddy while he's working his magic for the county. That's why it's really important to get rid of him. He does appear to kind of make it up as he goes, and that's certainly one of the areas that we need to challenge.
Right. So in other words, if you fail to appear in a court case, you have a right to a jury trial and a public defender, and that means you get out of Mulligan's court even if you fail to disqualify him, because he is not empowered to hear jury trials. He is not empowered to hear those kinds of cases.
That's right. And again, the crucial issue here being that failure to pay carries a possible jail sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And so you are, in fact, entitled to a jury trial any time that there's the possibility of a jail sentence.
And indeed, so I have seen him with my own ears in the last 2 months state, when a woman said, "I want a jury trial on this failure to appear," he said, "That's an infraction, sit down."
Huh.
That was his response. So indeed, we need to have someone challenge that.
Well, that's in essence what we're challenging here with Dennis.
It's failure to pay. That may be considered, and that's somewhat different. I don't think even that failure to appear, there is a statute, but it's not an infraction statute. There is a law that says, you know, you can face misdemeanor charges if you fail to appear, and it's proved. Failure to pay on an infraction, there is no such charge that I'm aware of for a non-vehicular infraction. So, again, it looks like he's making up laws as he goes along. And
whatever you have to do to get the revenue flowing into the coffers.
Well, you've got to balance the county's books, I mean, and the city's books. I think that's important. And we have to all work for that end, even if that means taking a few bogus charges every year. I mean, you know, consider it a part of the tax.
It's worth it to keep all
keep those bureaucrats, you know, well paid. And
afloat.
You know, I'd say Captain Byers of Jaguar needs servicing.
Oh, okay. Poor baby, yeah.
And Mayor Byers needs a new shine on her car.
Yeah.
Now, at any rate. You're also a civil rights attorney, Kate, and you have 5 pending cases against the Sheriff's Department, which were severely thrown into question by a ruling by the courts recently that apparently the Sheriff's Department is immune from these kinds of suits. Is that?
Oh boy, this is if there's one theme I want to drum into the listeners out there, is that we have to do something about governmental immunities. As far as I'm concerned, they are the reason for all of the abuses that happen. If people were held personally accountable for their own malicious, intentional actions that violate your civil rights, violate your constitutional rights, they would stop. They would stop. And instead, the government has just constantly been extending this concept of immunity over the years. It started out, actually, interestingly enough, historically, as a military right. In other words, they didn't want people suing their commanding officer for ordering you into battle And then, of course, you get killed or wounded, then they don't want you being able to turn around and sue them for civil damages. That's how the concept started. It has now extended to virtually any government employee who even intentionally and maliciously screws you. I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again just because there may be some listeners out there who weren't listening before. A cop can get up on the stand in your criminal trial and lie intentionally and maliciously, can lie for the purpose of having you put into jail, and is absolutely immune from civil damages. Absolutely and utterly immune from civil damages.
So what you have to do is get the DA to prosecute him on the basis of perjury or something?
Perjury, and of course...
That's not easy to do.
Yeah, why don't we ask when the last time the district attorney in Santa Cruz County brought a perjury charge against an officer?
No, that's
try never.
Oh, officers don't lie, man.
That's exactly right. That's try never. Mm-hmm. So this concept of immunity just continues to expand. The latest hit is actually a U.S. Supreme Court case that's come down out of that stems from an Alabama case where the sheriff in this particular borough or burg or whatever claimed that he was immune from civil damages because he was an agent of the state and not the county. Now, the state is and its bodies are immune under the 11th Amendment from any kind of civil damages. And this is for any official acts of the state, they're immune. So, in other words, the U.S. Supreme Court in a 5-4 decision, which has a vigorous dissent, by the way, which is very well written by Ruth Bader Ginsburg, they have said that the majority said that yes, the sheriff is indeed a state officer and therefore immune under the 11th Amendment. And the county no longer has to, you know, defend, evidently, we don't know how this is going to work out, even though the county continues to defend the, you know, these state officers. But, it's a terrible decision.
So you're in a position where officers have committed abuse against people. They've come to you for redress, for civil redress, for financial damages. And now you're going to have to turn around and say, we're screwed on this case, or do you have some other avenue?
No, I'm working really hard to, I mean, the cases have left a tiny bit of wiggle room. They basically said it depends on the function of the sheriff at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I have come up with an argument that I think it will be very difficult for them to counter, and that is this. The county sets the budget for the sheriff's department. As far as I'm concerned, if we can prove in this case that the county has not, in fact, given the sheriff's department enough money to hire competent personnel, or to do the proper psychological testing, or to weed out enough money to weed out these bad officers, which is, by the way, very expensive for them to do because they have a very strong union, that cannot possibly be attributed to the state. If this is in fact the reason and I'm quite convinced that is one of the reasons that they can't attribute these bad things to the county. I mean, to the state. They have to be attributed to the county.
And if they attribute them to the county, then the state immunity does not apply, and you're back.
And the odd thing about all of this is it none of this applies if it's a city policeman. So as far as, you know, anything against the Santa Cruz City Police or the Capitol Police or the Scotts Valley Police, they're still not immune from damage. They're perfectly, you know. So basically, you know, if you're going to get attacked by a city policeman.
All right. If I have my druthers. Well, so apparently Steve Argurat made that choice, or he
well, yeah, good
fell into
enough.
That situation when Dave LeFevre pounded him on the back with a truncheon by the reporter. Several witnesses at the May 22nd far brouhaha where they were doing the Stop the Bombing rally was happening. You had Steve Argue as a client in the past.
Right.
In fact, you have him as a client now in a lawsuit that's ongoing regarding thieves being brutalized and jailed falsely for selling street newspapers. The newspapers.
That's correct. Yeah, he was attacked by
Grim Grip Garner.
Yeah, actually, Garner had called for backup, and so I think there were two or three officers who took Steve down, and then later on, I guess Steve was treated to some pretty special behavior at the Santa Cruz County Jail too, when he made the outrageous request that he be given a fork to eat his meal.
A spoon, actually, I understand.
It was a spoon. Well, I think it was just any utensil, basically,
right,
other than his fingers, and they informed him that that he could eat with his fingers, and he, of course, informed them that they were fucking Nazi pigs, and
and he was severely punished, and thrown into isolation for it.
Shackled, handcuffed, thrown to the ground again, and put in lockdown.
And that lockdown, not only happened on the weekend of November 13th and thereafter, huh? It happened again when he was held a week or two ago. Based not on anything he had done since then or when he was jailed at this most recent time, but on that incident 6 months before.
That's correct.
So it seems to me that I would hope you got a potent lawsuit there without this concern about state immunity jumping into the picture. Steve, by the way, will be showing up at a Citizens Police Review Board meeting, which is happening tomorrow, Monday, June 14th at 5:30 down at City Hall. Steve has requested, and the board has put on the agenda, the question of an early investigation and public hearing of the Argue case by the Citizens Police Review Board. I'm not usually much of a advocate for the board, but I would like to see them, for the first time in their history, actually use this process of having an early investigation, because otherwise the whole investigation will be stalled until after Steve's legal case is settled, and of course any pending legal claims are settled, and that'll be...
Talking about the Street Spirit incident or the Lefevre?
Talking about the assault by Dave Lefevre on Argue, the brutalization by the police department for this non-violent protest. Involving what may have been involving one incident of self-defensive violence, that's another question. But anyway, that's 5:30 tomorrow at the CPRB if you're interested in showing up. I also wanted to talk to you about updates on Take Me to a Magistrate, which I guess B.E. Smith is in jail for a pot case, the first federal pot case involving a defense under Proposition 215, which is a state law which allows you to use medical marijuana, and he apparently has gotten shafted big time on that one.
Yeah.
And also the question of what people do, we're looking for some that elusive form that will enable a person to write down, I will sign my name, but then the next day I will rescind it if you won't take me to a magistrate. That defense, which says that there's a constitutional guarantee to be not just taken to a jail cell and booked, but actually taken before a magistrate to see if there is adequate basis for the charges immediately. And I guess it's the case of vehicular infractions and vehicular misdemeanors, but not in the case of, let's say, assaults and battery and things of that sort?
That's correct. That's correct.
So that has, and I want to talk to you about all that, but I know that, you've already taken time out this morning. You're preparing a big brief, and I know you're going to be probably playing your fiddle down at Harry Connable's 1 to 7 Streetwise concert.
Actually, I'm going to be working real hard on a case that I'm trying to hold the Sheriff's Department to. Liable. This is the woman who was arrested at her own apartment complex swimming pool. I've told you about this.
I don't know if you have.
By an officer who was pissed off at her because she had kicked him when he tried to arrest her two nights before. He showed up at her apartment house, and. She's coming out of the swimming pool in her bathing suit, basically tells her to turn around, handcuffs her, takes her away. Once he gets her in the car, he says, "So are you going to kick me again?" Takes her to jail in her wet bathing suit, barefoot, where they proceed to hold her for 4 or 5 hours in a urine-soaked cell, barefoot, in her wet bathing suit, freezing to death, at which point around, 11 o'clock that night, they told her she could go home. Never brought any charges, found out later that he had arrested her for being drunk in public.
Name of the officer? Name of the deputy?
Derek Fenster.
Derek Fenster.
Yeah, so, but again, the county's making the argument that they're immune, and
they're immune, we're all in trouble, it's quite clear.
Trying to hold them in there, so, at any rate, it's,
I know there's been a lot of concern about Jerry Henry and Richard Quigley out at the, Apto Shopping Center and the tax on youth out there. It made the Metro in a rather slanted, but still interesting story in the Metro of Santa Cruz recently. Any updates on that you know of?
None that I'm aware presently. I don't know what's going on right now.
We've been talking to Kay Wells, and we are talking to Kay Wells, who, again, as usual, has given us much more of her time than she intended to. Kate, I appreciate, again, you're sharing these cases with us.
Okay.
And let us know what's going on. Yep.
And write your congressman about this immunity thing.
Because anybody who is concerned about homeless rights issues, you can get in touch with Tony Bull, who is interested in helping people out with sleeping ban tickets, cases of police abuse, or the most recent scourge of Santa Cruz, troll busting, the attacks on innocent homeless people for sleeping. And I'm going to give that number in a moment.
Yeah, see, I have to say that I hold the city council and the board of supervisors directly responsible for that kind of action, because they have, in fact, treated people who are homeless or, again, I see this as a class struggle, they have treated them as less than human and have paved the way for anyone, especially a young, impressionable person.
Set the benchmark. Set up a model for behavior. Yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Just like Clinton has set up the behavior for what happened at Columbine, the Board of Supervisors and the City Council have not only paved the way but encouraged that kind of behavior.
Yeah, it's really clear that, I said this to Mike Rotkin when he was on the show 3 days ago. He told me, oh gosh, how sad it is, and he's really concerned about this trail busting. But then I said, well, what are you going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't you realize that the biggest trail buster in 1996 was you when you were mayor? You were having homeless people arrested at protests. You were, you know, in essence, leading the charge to maintain unconstitutional laws that make it illegal for homeless people to sleep.
And what'd he say?
Well, we differ on this, Robert. It's more or less his position.
On that note.
Yeah, right.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Kay Wells, thank you very much, and I hope to talk to you again.
Okay, thank you.
They bust the starving kid who steals is wild and black cats make their sweetheart deals on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on a city street, lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat, lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV, lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me.
Here with another thrilling episode of Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless. Today's journey takes us to the streets of your city, where we'll visit the homeless in their native habitats, street corners of makeshift cardboard shelters, sewer grate and doorway bedrooms, soup-lined kitchens lit by blazing oil barrel fireplaces, alleyways of the addicted, the unemployed, the destitute, the insane, eating and sleeping in the most unlikely places. It's all here on Lifestyles of the Poor and Nameless.
Down in the ghetto, there's always room for the ethnic population boom. The melting pot boils past the brim while the people's future's looking grim on lifestyles of the poor and nameless, begging for a bite to eat, lifestyles of the poor and nameless, sleeping on the city street, lifestyles of the poor and nameless, seldom seen on your TV, lifestyles of the poor and nameless, coming soon to you and me.
Got two of my buddies up. I'm not going to say their names, but we went out in the levee, under the bridges, looking for troll busters, because we wanted to beat their ass up, and we could not find them. We had a dry night.
That sounds like they found you today, huh? What happened today?
Well, they got their asses kicked.
You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside, Civil Rights for the Poor, and that last voice you heard was that of Ray Stitz. You may have read about him, too. He was in the Wednesday Sentinel. We brought the case of his beating by anti-homeless trollbusters. Ray is a homeless man who was beaten on Tuesday. Brought that case to the city council on Tuesday night, only to get a vast silence from Mayor Byers' oh-so-humanitarian go to sleep, go to jail, city council. You're going to hear more of his report. We were actually holding a HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom meeting out at the Homeless Services Center on Tuesday afternoon, planning to bring to the attention of the city council these beatings, when here a man walks in, his arm bruised and bloody, an older man with a cane, who reports another attack by homeless or anti-homeless trollbusters out at Harvey West Park. Let's hear more of Ray Stitz.
And where did this happen?
Harvey West Park.
Right. And how long ago was this?
2 hours ago.
And tell me what happened, Ray.
Well, they came up to me with two canes, and I'm reading a book, a John Grisham book, you know, just mind my own business, and they want to know, what are you doing? I said, I'm reading a book. I just had an argument with my wife. I'm trying to stay away. Because I recognized him. In a way, I felt, you know how you get a feeling? And they go, look at me, because they see me with a backpack, and they see me a little bit unashamed. They say, oh, bullshit. And there's one kid, the little punk, who's shorter than the other one. He's about 5'9". You know, he raises his cane and swings it at me, and I just stick up my hand because I was already had that premonition, and boom, he hits me there.
And you're showing me your left arm,
my left arm.
The
right
back of your left arm has some cuts and abrasions, some blood on it.
Yeah. I said, you fool. So I just hit him with my left hand because he was surprised, you know, I stuck my arm up, and I just slapped him down, and I looked at the other guy, and I said, are you ready for the same thing? And he's about 5'11", maybe 6'10".
How old were these guys?
About Oh, man, it's hard to tell when you're 54 years old. Everybody looks younger than me.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't tell you that blonde guy there with the long hair how old he is right now.
Right.
I couldn't even tell you Flower how old
she
is.
Approximately.
Well, I'd say the punk that hit me is about 18. And then the bigger one, I'd say about 1920.
Were these skinhead folks? Or?
No, they were not skinheads. They had their blonde hair, straight hair, parted in the middle, but they were shaved, you know, how they do it, you know, around their ears and on the back of the head. And then I stepped on his right foot, it was his left foot, with my right foot, and I went, bam! And I knocked him down. I said, get out of my face.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. The party was over, and they ran away. So I'm looking around for all my property, because there's my blue path right over there. Damn, I gotta go back up there and look for my book. I lost that.
You don't want to lose that Gresham book.
Oh, no, I'm only halfway through it. You don't want to lose a book when you're halfway through it.
Do you think they were related?
No, it didn't have any similarity in facial features, nothing like that. But they ran so fast away from me, I just got off work. I'm a little bit pooped.
What kind of work do you do?
I was out landscaping over at Bob's Grove, you know, on Golf Club Drive. So, that's all that.
How long have you been in the area?
I've been in the area since 1987. I've only been homeless since 1991.
Have you experienced any other kinds of attacks of this sort in the last year?
Nope, not me, but a lot of my friends have.
How many would you estimate since January have been attacked by these troll busters?
Seven.
And
I'm a mathematician. I know things, and I retain them.
How about police? Have police been giving out tickets for sleeping, as far as you know?
I don't know. I don't get them.
They're working on it.
Are you a sleeper outside or indoors? You don't get ticketed though. He's shaking his head with a smile, folks, and I wish you could see it. Anything you want to add, Ray?
We're all human beings, even though we're homeless, but why are we treated like dirt?
Because we feel the dirt.
Thank you very much, Ray.
You're welcome.
And that was Ray Stitz, one of the latest victims of Trollbusters out at Harvey West Park. It was during the day, and Ray wasn't sleeping, but a major concern I've had, and I think others at the Homeless Services Center and in HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, share with me, is that because of our sleeping ban law, which Councilmember Rotkin and I were debating, I was trying to get him to show some courage and some common sense and take some action. We have a situation where people are criminalized at night, and so they can't really sleep in safe areas or sleep in groups together and avoid this kind of vicious assault or protect themselves. We have an incoming call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hello. I just wanted to call. I'm sorry that I interrupted. I just wanted to call to say that that you guys are making an awesome radio there. You know, this is so important that there is a voice out there, you know, talking for the homeless. It's very, very important.
Well, it's important, important that you call in, too. Are you yourself homeless? Or
no, I'm not.
You have friends who are out there?
Not really. I mean, I barely have friends out here. But, I mean, it really... I mean, I can relate, as you could say. I can relate to what is being out there. And
are you a local in Santa Cruz yourself?
Uh-huh.
And how are the rents treating you?
Pretty bad.
Right.
You know?
Well, you know, I sound like you're a Spanish-speaking person.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this is, I wish I could speak Spanish mejor, porque mi español es muy pequeño, entonces no puedo hablar muy bien, ¿verdad? In other words, I can't speak very well for all you English speakers out there. But, you know, one of the things we've been talking about, and we're going to be talking about later in the show, is the proposal to bulldoze the Dolphin Lee project. Have you heard about that?
No.
Dolphin Lee is two apartment buildings in the Beach Flats that have about 200 people in them now. They're folks who are almost universal. They're entirely Spanish speaking, and I'm told they're from the same village in Mexico. Many of them, they have their own community here.
Mm-hmm.
And the plan of the city. These were people who opposed the bulldozing of the Beach Flats last fall. Are you familiar with that whole thing?
Yeah.
And the bulldozing of the beach flats last fall was successfully defeated by people like this group in the Dolphin Lee apartment complex, but now is being targeted by apparently Andy Schifrin and a couple of other folks who are, you know, I think there should be a low-income housing project put in right on top of them. They want to evict them, give them enough money to, you know, maybe get a house, get a room for a while somewhere else, but no indication that would last, you know, for any length of time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, put in a new housing project run by a group called Mercy Housing. And in the beach flats, there are folks who think that there are better ways to get more housing, like
Greta. Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I mean, I don't think kicking people out of the place they've been living for a while is the solution at all, you know? And then, you know, why do you have to go through all that trouble? I mean, it just sounds a little bureaucratic and ruthless. Like, I don't care about these people, and I'm just going to make them pay the way I want them to pay or something like that, you know? It's just kind of, I don't know, it's like, as far as I've seen, all the legislations and decisions of the people that rule this county and are just towards, you know, helping the wealthy ones, and then the people that have nothing are the ones that pay for all, you know.
What's your name, caller?
My name is Ernesto.
Ernesto?
Mm-hmm.
Ernesto, what part of town do you live in?
I live in downtown.
And how do you get treated by police down there?
Well, I have very little incidents.
That's good.
Around here, but once, that was when I first moved in town. I was coming from Miami Beach, in which they don't have. I mean, they don't. The police there is a lot more busy doing other stuff, but they don't harass people that much. And as well, they're more used to like a more culturally diverse population.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harder to get harassed by the color of your skin or anything, or by being drinking a beer on the street. And that was what happened to me. I didn't know that you cannot drink beer in the street here, even with a brown bag, because in Miami Beach you can just drink with a brown bag in your bottle, and that's all good. So I was walking in the Pacific Mall with my bottle of beer in a brown bag, and this police car stopped me. He just flashlight me in the face. The cop came out and he asked me to sit in the ground. You know, like, he totally made a huge scene out of it, you know, and keep me down there. And then he gave me a $135 ticket for having a beer in my hand. And I didn't know that was not allowed here. You know, I explained him, and he gave me a $135 ticket for that.
Were your friends also ticketed, your companions?
No, I was by myself.
I see. And do you know the name of the police officer who ticketed you?
No, not really. Actually, I gave him a fake name. Mm-hmm. And a fake address, so whatever.
I see. Well, I should advise you, all you police officers listening, that, you know, you wouldn't have this kind of problem with people if there wasn't this kind of harassment. I think Open Container is really bogus, as well as discriminatory against homeless people. What about, how long ago did this happen, Ernesto?
That happened about 2 years ago, but then after that, once I was going up to my house. I used to live in another area in the Beach Hill, and I was going up my house, and this cop saw me, like, riding my bike up my house, and like, he totally turned his car around and went all the way, and she came up to me, and she was like, "What are you doing here?" And I was like, "I'm going to my house." So where do you live? You know, she started asking me questions, right? And I was like, "What's all this about?" You know, and she's like, "No, you just fit the description of." And I was like, "Damn!" And then she let me go. And then the other time, the three times I'm just telling you the three times I've been harassed here by the cops.
Please.
And then
tell me.
The other time I was in front of a Catalyst, and there was a show going on. And this was really fucked up, you know, because it was like everybody outside was, I'm black, mm-hmm. and everybody outside was white. And I was the only black dude, like, you know, standing in front of the club. And these two cops came up to me, and they were like, you know, like, they didn't even say goodnight or anything. They were like, "You know, just show me your ID, you know. And I would say, I don't have any ID with me. And he say, well, I don't know. He just kept asking me questions. I can't even remember the exact questions because I was kind of drunk. I was like, I'm in this show. I'm like, you know, I'm just enjoying myself. What are you bothering me here for? You know, they were like being total jerks, you know. Well, and then they kind of let me go. You know, they were like, oh, we're going to be good. We're going to let you go. We're just harassing you a little bit. But you see, like, how much, you know, like, empowerment, you know, like, they felt like they can do anything with you because they have a gun and they're big, they're strong, and they're white, you know?
Well, what do you, you're a man who obviously you have contacts with the African-American and the Hispanic community here.
Well,
your friends are black and brown as well as white.
I mean, yeah, I have, I mean, there's not many black people around here, to tell you the
truth. Right, but
you know, it's like I have a couple of black friends around here.
How are they, is there, do they complain about discrimination by the police that they feel is based on color or not?
You know what? It's hard to say, I mean, because people around here, they don't think they're racist, you know? A lot of people, a lot of white people around here, they have a lot of racist attitudes, but they don't acknowledge it, you know, because racism around here, like that way, that open way, is not
cool.
You know what I'm saying?
I know
so
what you're saying.
A lot of people around here don't consider themselves racist, but they, so like if you told that to a cop, he'll be like, well, whatever, you know, I'm not a racist, you know, but I mean, the way, I mean, I have only been stopped by cops around here like 3 times in the last 2 years, and it's been like really brief. And I mean, once I get ticketed, but I mean, I have my tricks, so whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, most of the time they never harass me or stop me or anything. I have to admit that. Although I'm a pretty quiet guy, you know, and I'm not out there. I'm not living on the streets. I knew if I was living on the streets, the situation would be totally different.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
any reports from your friends that you think show it? Do you think that, I mean, you're saying that the police and the whites in the community don't think they're racist, but do you think that they in fact act in a way that really is racist, that they're just not aware of? I mean, are they?
Yeah, I think so.
You do?
I think so. And I mean, not just racist, anti-youth too, you know.
Anti-Semitic?
No, anti-young people.
Oh, anti-youth, I gotcha.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is, anti-anything that goes out of the norm, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, cops down here are, I mean, they have nothing else to do because, I mean, the crime rate down here is, I mean, this is a quiet town in a way, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so they focus more on harassing people, you know. People of all sorts. I mean, I have seen cops harassing people, white people, black people, anybody that is on the street doing something that is not...
Anything recent, Ernesto, that you want to comment on?
Excuse me?
Have you seen anything recent around this
one? Anything recent? Well, as in cops, you know, busting a party for nothing, you know, like nothing was going on, like somebody just called and being really rude to the people, you know. Once in the Beach Hill, there was a party, like it was just like 10:30 or something, and they gave him a huge ticket because they first came once, but there was a bunch of people there and at that party, and like it was hard for the people that were living there to get him out of the house. And then they said, if we come back again, we're going to give you a ticket if all these people are here. And the people were still trying to get him out, but they couldn't. And they get a huge ticket, you know. I think it was abusive.
I hear you. Well, Ernesto, I appreciate your calling in. Anything you want to conclude with?
Well, I just wanted to go tell you guys that I think you guys are doing great radio, you know. And the fact that, you know, you're just talking about issues that they don't get to be talked of on the regular media, you know. It's just really good, you know.
You know, I agree with you. I wish I heard more of these issues talked about more in the regular media and mainstream media, but that's what we're here for.
Yeah, they're not going to talk about that because,
yeah.
You know, media is controlled by all those Jupy bastards. They don't care, you know. I mean, that's a big disease of this country, and it's like people don't care.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get people to care if they if they're busy watching TV or like, you know, busy with their credit cards or their new car and all the stuff that they make you be entertained with, and they make you basically forget the basics of life, you know, and the spiritual side of life and the compassionate side of life. That's what they want you to do, so you just get all focused on the material stuff. And that's why, I mean, I have a kind of a fatalistic view of the future. I don't think this is gonna last very long, you know. It's kind of sad. I wish that there was space for people like us, you know, that we can that we want to, like, you know, change things and stuff. But I don't think it's gonna be a change because people are so focused on, you know.
Well, listen, Ernesto, I'm hoping we can expand that period, and I'm gonna run so I can let somebody else call in.
All right, man.
Thanks for calling.
So you have a good day, and thanks a lot for the work you're doing. You're doing great.
Thank you for calling.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
And, hey, a real caller and a real supporter, and that's what we need more of. We need more people who are interested in what's going on. I mean, I'd like the praise, too, but Ernesto, you know, actually isn't far wrong when he's talking about how much on the edge things like Free Radio Santa Cruz is. It's what you're listening to, 96.3 FM, Free Radio. We, for example, are being evicted within a month. We don't have an alternate place to go. We are looking for a place, but so far there is none. That means that this station is going to die, or at least go into suspended animation, you know, come the end of July. So if you have any ideas, if you have any thoughts about a place for Free Radio to go, and Free Radio is, you know, we're not the bad boys here, really. I mean, we may be operating without a license, and that's fine, and that's the FCC doesn't like it, but the local community city council has actually given us a unanimous endorsement, you know, that they like the fact that voices in the community are being given a channel to speak through, and this is really important. Here's an incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
I just wanted to correct that last statement. It wasn't a unanimous support from the city council. Remember, Cynthia Matthews voted no to free speech.
Oh, well, thank you for that correction.
Yeah, it's my ever-vigilant producer kicking my butt down the road, and properly so. I guess I was thinking of Berkeley's city council, which voted unanimously for its free radio. Cynthia Matthews, ever the prim and proper person, has apparently not seen fit to validate what we're doing. But I think that you listeners want to see more of these programs. You want to see hear more of these programs, Making Contact, Alternate Views of the War, real news about homeless people from homeless people. And in order to do that, we got to find a place to go, and we need your help. So if you got any thoughts on this, want to contribute anything one way or another, the voicemail for Free Radio is 427-4523, 427-4523. Call in number if you want to join this discussion or talk about anything you've heard so far, or perhaps some...